Caucus edition of On Iowa Politics for Friday, January 30th, 2016. This week, turnout. What if they threw a caucus and nobody came? Or everybody came? What will turnout be Monday night? Who will win? Who will beat expectations? And who will make the best argument that they really did beat expectations? And were the polls right? And finally, what's the future of Iowa's first-in-the-nation caucuses? Hi, I'm James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. With me today are Brett Hayworth of the Sioux City Journal. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, James. I'm afraid if I say hello, I will think of the Huckabee web ad that came out the other day, and I want to stay away from that.
Give us a rendition of that, Brett. Give us. Christinia Krippis of the Waterloo Courier. Good morning, Christinia.
Good morning, guys.
Ed Tibbetts of the Quad City Times. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, James.
Aaron Murphy, Lee Newspaper State House Bureau Chief. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, everybody.
And Gazette columnist Todd Dorman. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
You can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher. Before we get to our regular agenda, did anyone see the GOP debate last night or the Donald Trump circus? Which was better? And do we know more about Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio for Donald Trump's absence? Thoughts? I thought Cruz tried too hard to be the big man in the debate. I mean, since he was at center stage, especially at the beginning when he, you know, kind of did the insult everybody and get it out of the way, and then when he argued with the moderators. To me, he just seemed like he was trying a little too hard to replace Donald Trump. And beyond that, I thought Rubio had a really strong night, and Bush should get an award for the most improved.
Yeah, the whole thing was set up perfectly for Rubio. I mean, Trump's gone, so all of the fire is aimed at Ted Cruz. And that allowed Rubio to really sort of stand out at a really critical time. It wouldn't surprise me when the Register's poll comes out over the weekend that he's sort of the momentum candidate of the moment and could, you know, very well be, regardless of which place he finishes, could be seen as kind of the winner on Monday.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see those two. I thought it was interesting to see those two go at each other in Trump's absence. Obviously, they're the next two in the pecking order in the polls. A little bit of daylight between them. Obviously, Rubio would like to close that daylight, and as we know, the caucuses are much about expectations as they are the actual hard numbers. So if Rubio, who's been in, you know, the 10 to 14 range since last Halloween, if, you know, if he all of a sudden finishes strong here, and if people reacted well to him at the debate, then he improves those numbers on caucus night, then that's a victory for him. And I think he saw that opportunity in last night's debate. I still talk, and I wrote about this in my debate, so I still talk about their top two. A lot of Republican voters who are still deciding between is Cruz and Rubio. And I think you saw that both candidates knew that as they went after each other last night.
This is Brett. The thing that I noticed, or one of my takeaways, was this was a chance to talk about immigration. And I thought it didn't really clear the air for people that were watching it as far as what's amnesty, what's not amnesty, and how they described what Rubio voted for and how he explained it, and Bush attacked him. And I just thought, you know, so there's a lot of information there, but I thought overall it just kind of clouded the whole thing for the casual observer, and didn't really, I guess, explain if someone is an amnesty candidate or not an amnesty candidate. And they talk so much about that and try to explain votes away and everything, and it just did not seem clear to me. From a casual watcher.
This is Ed. I guess I would just say that given the no-holds-barred nature of the debate, given that it's this late, I don't know that it was such a bad move for Donald Trump to step aside. He may have saved himself some pain.
Well, and he certainly got enough attention with his event too, and I'm sure he'll claim victory.
You think?
Yeah.
I think he will. Well, you know, Megyn Kelly asked a lot of really tough questions, and he may have been smart to avoid that, because I think she was probably laying in wait for him anyway. But
well, yeah, you kind of wonder what the video montage for Donald Trump would have been, you know, all his previous statements and things,
right.
If they didn't have one of those prepared for Donald Trump, which I think he would have had a hard time defending.
Well, and, you know, on immigration and terrorism and all these issues, Trump wasn't there, but you heard Republican candidates who were there taking basically Trumpian positions on all of those issues. So, you know, yeah, you could argue that Trump won in absentia, but yeah, I still think Marco Rubio was able to sort of stand out from the seven that were there.
Mm-hmm. There's an old saying in the Iowa caucuses, it all comes down to turnout. Aaron, you covered the Iowa Democratic and GOP chairs a week or so ago when they made their turnout predictions. It doesn't sound like they're expecting record-breaking turnout, despite having contested caucuses in both parties. Are they just lowballing their estimates so they don't get accused of overselling the caucuses, and then on Monday night they can express amazement at the huge turnouts?
Yeah, that's a great question. I never thought of it. As I just said, for the candidates, caucus results are so much about expectations. It's never occurred to me to think about it from the state party chair's perspective as well. I'm sure from their seat they would rather undersell than oversell and have people then ask, well, how come you didn't get as many as you said? The Republican side, they do expect to have a record. I don't know if he expects to blow it out of the water, but the Republicans do expect to break their record of, and please forgive me if I'm off on this, around 120,000. That they had in 2012. Jeff Kaufman does expect to surpass that. Andy McGuire expects a big turnout for the Democrats, but not to the level of 2008, which was, of course, the open seat race with a big field of Democrats, a lot of excitement for a number of candidates, including Hillary Clinton and John Edwards and Howard Dean. And then, of course, the historic ground organization of Barack Obama and the turnout machine that drove that number. So the Democrats don't expect to reach that historic number.
That's always, there's a lot of discussion about turnout around the caucuses and the fact that it's low. People from outside of Iowa always talk about how low the number is. In as you mentioned, other than that huge number, 39.5% of Democrats in 2008, caucus turnout is usually quite a bit lower. In 2012, for example, the Republicans turned out almost 20% of their registered voters in the contested caucuses. But on the other hand, if you look at 2012, average turnout in 41 states that held Democratic and Republican presidential primaries was just 17.3%, the lowest since 1972. So, Todd, when people badmouth the caucuses because of low turnout, is this a bum rap?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, to the outsider, I mean, it is somewhat a legitimate criticism to point out that this does attract a pretty small percentage of registered voters in Iowa and actual party members. But that's always been true. So it's just, you know, it's part of the process. The thing that Iowa has going for it will be, and has always been, that, you know, we've had the political media industrial complex has been churning for the better part of the last couple of years, waiting for some actual voters to say something about what's happening, and that's what's going to happen Monday. And so, yes, if the turnout is healthy, that'll be fine, and they'll have results, and that's what they're looking for. I mean, yeah, there will be grumbling about, well, look, it's only this small percentage of Iowans, but I mean, that's something that the caucuses have been criticized for a lot of times, and what people will care a lot more about is who won and who did well and who has momentum going into New Hampshire.
The turnout argument seems to be the one that comes down the road when they say, like, well, should Iowa be first in 4 years? I mean, for the next week, everybody will be talking, like you said, about winners and losers and who's moving on and who got snowed in Des Moines.
Well, and from a turnout standpoint, the moment when the Weather Service moved that winter storm to Tuesday was when Andy McGuire and Jeff Kaufman took, you know, quit taking antacid constantly. So, put the Tums away.
Anyone have thoughts on turnout? What we should expect Monday night?
This is Ed. I guess I just, contrast the ongoing observation that Iowa's turnout is low will continue to ongo. The real interesting question, of course, is what's the composition of the turnout? It presents a lot of questions for Bernie Sanders. The collection of support that he has in college towns, the fact that college students are actually in college towns, including out-of-state students, will be an interesting factor. And then the whole question of whether the non-traditional caucus goer that Donald Trump is set to attract, whether those folks will show up. I mean, those are sort of the real interesting questions that we have going into Monday night.
Moving on, of course, there's more than one way to win a caucus. A candidate can get more votes or delegate equivalents than his or her rivals, or they can win the old-fashioned way, beat expectations. And Ben Carson says that when we see the results on Tuesday morning, we'll be scratching our heads and asking ourselves, what the heck happened? Christiania, what will that surprise be?
That's a really good question, and I guess we'll find out Monday. But, really what I think is that, I think it was already sort of said, the question I think will be how much daylight is between the kind of first top three candidates. Will Ted Cruz be, closer ahead of Donald Trump, or will, like Ed said, will he kind of fade back and Marco Rubio kind of shine? I think, obviously we could all be wrong, but I think that those are kind of those first three. So I guess to me, what the surprise will be is who finishes fourth and how close that person is. And that person could exceed expectations, since we've all sort of been talking about these top two, top three candidates. Who's that next person and can they keep going? So that would be my thoughts on what the surprise will be.
Mm-hmm. Ed, do you think we'll be surprised?
I think in terms of the expectation game, the real danger here is for the candidates that don't meet expectations, not so much those who do meet expectations getting a bump. I think that may be where the real story lies.
Given that the expectations for some of these candidates are pretty low, who's not going to meet expectations?
The question, is for Donald Trump, whether he can live up to, his poll standing. He's a non-traditional candidate. And then there's, the question for Hillary Clinton, what will be considered a win for her if she does indeed win?
Brett, a lot of these folks on the Republican side have been spending the better part of the past year in Western Iowa. Are you getting any sense of whether this is a Trump-Cruz race, or is anybody else likely to, break into the top two?
Yeah, I guess I'm really curious to see the Trump, and I don't know if you're going to ask us for predictions, but a few of us were on another call earlier the week, and we got into some predictions, and I guess I'm going to maybe go there, but I don't know that I'm. We crunched some numbers on voter registration up here in Northwest Iowa, the first write that will run tomorrow, and talked to some county auditors, and there hasn't been this huge influx of new Republican voters, even up in Sioux County where it's heavily, heavily Republican. And so it really calls into question whether the Trump is bringing new people that are going to caucus for him on Monday. I don't know. If he finishes third, just think of what the discussion will be. If it's Cruz, Rubio, Trump, then Trump has under exceeded expectations. And then, that just brings on a whole new level of scrutiny and a whole new dialogue. I really wonder if that isn't exactly how it might play out. Cruz, Rubio, Trump.
Okay. Anybody else want to go out there on the limb and make a prediction? All right. Then in that case, we'll have to rely.
Come on.
We'll rely on the polls being accurate. And Ed, when we get done counting ballots and equivalents on Monday night? Are we going to say, boy, those polls sure were right on, or will that be what we're scratching our heads about, is what the heck were the polls, why the heck were the polls wrong?
Well, you know, mostly on the Republican side, the polls have been fairly cohesive. On the Democratic side, there's been a little bit of a spread. So I think inevitably however it turns out, we'll be talking about polls that were wrong and polls that were more close to being right. And then, of course, the next cycle will still over-rely on them. I think the added dimension this year gets back to, and I alluded to it earlier, Donald Trump. He has so relied, I think, on polling to convince people that his non-traditional candidacy is real and is in first place, that if he doesn't live up to those polls, then not only will Trump be questioned, but a lot of these polls will be, and so the journalists who have been relying on them.
Yeah, it seems like for Trump that, you know, it's kind of he's probably in the largest sort of make or break position. I think if he were to win, that would be a huge boost and maybe sort of propel him onward all the way to the nomination. But if he loses, you know, I think maybe the wheels start coming off. And granted, it will be a very, very slow motion train wreck, because it will take a long time for Donald Trump to cease and desist if that occurs. But I do think it, you know, it will damage him, especially if he were to finish third. I think that would be, I mean, I think, you know, what you'd see is sort of the establishments had started to kind of cozy up to the idea of him winning, and I think you'll see people just that'll stop immediately if he doesn't do well.
Just to put this in perspective, at this point in 2004, Howard Dean was leading the polls by 6 percentage points. In 2008, Hillary Clinton still had a 10-point lead in the polls. And in 2012, Newt Gingrich was up by 3.8%. And they all went on to become president. And actually, none of them even was the nominee, were they? Yeah, we'll stay tuned on that one. And then
Gingrich's administration went by in a flash.
It did. It just, yeah.
You missed it.
It certainly did. Yeah, the good old days of the Gingrich administration. As long as I can remember, one of the big questions about the caucuses after the ballots are counted is, will this be the last first-in-the-nation caucus for Iowa? Brett, in 4 years, will we be talking about the caucuses again, or will we be lamenting the fact that the road to the nomination doesn't start in Iowa?
Well, I guess one obvious answer to that would be that who wins the caucus will play a factor. You know, if the winner of the caucus goes on to become president, you know, that gives a whole, I guess, layer of protection to keep Iowa first in the nation. But, you know, there'll always be all kinds of states that want to jump up, you know, before Iowa, push Iowa back. And, you know, we'll keep hearing the same criticisms that Iowa isn't a diverse state. It's not a, you know, representative of America as a whole, and I guess if a conservative like Cruz wins Iowa, then you'd have what? During year, you would have Huckabee, Santorum, Cruz, and you know that isn't going to please establishment Republicans. So you know there'll be calls. You know it all depends, but of course I guess the selling point is that, you know, Iowa's it's a process that where people have to work kind of retail events and the candidates learn to campaign hard, and I think there's a value in that. And so I guess ultimately, if I were to guess, I'm thinking we'll still be talking about Iowa being right at the front of the process, hopefully.
Christina, who's a better defender of Iowa's first in the nation status, the parties or the out of state media who come to Iowa and eat pork chops on a stick and freeze their butts off on caucus night?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, on the one hand, it seems like the national media are the ones who are the most disparaging of Iowa's first of the nation. So when other people do push back against that and defend it, that helps a lot. But, you know, I think the parties sort of have to be those everyday cheerleaders and explain the process and the role that it plays So I guess I'd say it's mostly a combination, or it would be a combination of both, because you sort of need both to keep it going.
What do you guys think of that? This is Brett. I'm looking on Twitter. I'm curious what your conversations are with the other reporters that are coming in. From what I'm seeing, you know, and I've talked to a few, but I follow quite a few on Twitter. It seems like they enjoy coming to Iowa, and they like some of that. Or do you think that's just public? What do you guys hear me
talk
about?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, Brett. This is Aaron. I was going to say kind of the same thing, Brett. Jim and Ed, you guys have done this a little longer than I have, so tell me what you think. But it seems to me that the national reporters who come here early in the caucus season, not just within this past week like the thousands that have come in, but the ones who are here to cover the whole process, the ones who see it, the ones who really get involved and entrenched on the ground here, those are the ones who, you know, if you talk to them about it, they understand the process and respect it. They see its follies too. They see its faults as well, but they're also more likely to embrace it versus the columnists and experts who are looking at this thing from afar and writing from their offices in parts unknown, and those are the people more likely to criticize the process. That's been my take anyways. What do you guys think of that?
Well, I tend to agree, and I think, you know, one of the things that some of these reporters like about the Iowa caucuses is that they are run so well. I mean, for whatever criticism they get, they're really run pretty well. The parties know how to do it. From the state party on down, people know how to caucus. They know how to organize. You know, these reporters would go to any state that was first in the nation, but it would be a lot rougher road for them in a state that had never done a caucus before and was just learning. You'd have the reporters teaching the parties how to caucus, I think.
It's the old Stockholm syndrome.
You know,
we hold them captive for several months and they grow to love us.
Yes. Dang, the secret's out.
Well, I don't know how I followed that up. I probably shouldn't. That's brilliant, Todd. But, you know, I guess I just... I think there's always been a divide between the opinion writers and the beat writers about Iowa's value. And much like, you know, journalists themselves, whether they're in the national media or in Iowa, the opinion writers, you know, sort of are the dreamers and tell us what should be, and the folks who are on the beat, they deal with the situation as it is. And so I think that's a lot of what we've all seen.
All right. That's it for this edition of On
Reporters. Stockholm Syndrome, isn't it?
It may be Stockholm Syndrome. Okay. All right. That's it for this edition of On Iowa Politics. I hope it was worth your time. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Fan mail may be sent to oniowapolitics@gmail.com. You can find us every week on the home pages of the Quad City Times, Sioux City Journal, Muscatine Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Waterloo Courier, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Dream Thieves, an Iowa City alternative band, will take us out. How appropriate. Dream Thieves. Yeah, that was not planned. If you know a band or know a talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, send us a sound file. And remember to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher. For Christinia, Ed, Aaron, Brett, Todd, and our producer, Claire, I'm James Lynch. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to call us. Thank you.